Hello, friends. Welcome to another episode of Voices of Hope. This week on the podcast, we have Scott Lucia, and Scott's going to talk about his life as a pathologist and the unexpected movements God makes in his life to explore art. And he's part of our drama ministry at New Hope and also sings in the choir, as well as does some solos every once in a while in worship. So enjoy our conversation. Scott, thanks for joining us on the podcast. I wanted you to come on here because you have a few, hands in different cookie jars, or is that the
different
phrase?
Irons in the fire.
Different irons in the fire. You have a very interesting job, and then you are also very active here at New Hope within music, worship, theater, and sometimes I wonder how you find the time to do all this stuff. And tell a little bit about yourself, what you do, and whatever you want us to know.
So my job in the outside world is a pathologist. Got interested in medicine it was really after high school. It wasn't until I really got into college. I had been a athletic trainer in high school. A student athletic trainer, thought that would where I'd really like to be. And when I got to college, those doors were kind of closed to me very, very quickly. You know, I wasn't going to be able to be an athletic trainer in college. But decided, well, why stop there? Why don't I go to the next length? And so I really got interested in, at first, you know, orthopedic surgery seemed to be the way to go. Decided to go ahead and take the MCAT. And then got into medical school. In medical school, it's interesting how you change your career choices so quickly. We actually had a questionnaire in the beginning of medical school. You know, what do you see yourself doing as a subspecialty, and what is the least likely thing you'll do? And my first choice was orthopedic surgery, and my least likely was pathology. You know, there's no way I'm probably going to be doing that because I didn't really know what it was at the time. And then through going through medical school, things really changed. I realized that I didn't like surgery really at all. There wasn't anything about it that I liked. I was trying to force the issue, and it just wasn't working for me. And so I kind of got into a period where I wasn't sure what I wanted to do. And my father helped out. He had a friend who was a pathologist. I happened to be away on in Louisville, Kentucky, doing a research rotation there because it really helps to get land residency programs. And I guess I was down, and he heard it on the phone. He really said, you know, on his own accord, he invited this pathologist who lived, you know, less than an hour away from Louisville, Kentucky, to come take me to lunch. And he started to talk to me about you know, why I was feeling down. I was lost. Here I am, you know, in my fourth year of medical school, and I don't know what I want to do.
Yeah.
And so he started to talk about, have you ever considered pathology? I said, that was the least likely thing I was going to do. And he goes, you just don't know what pathology is. And he went and he showed me the different world of pathology. Because at that time I thought, you know, it was Quincy, right? It was all autopsy work and working with dead people. It just isn't. I don't do any of that. And I found out with what we call surgical pathology that I actually do diagnoses during operations and that kind of thing. And that really turned me on to it. And so I applied, pathology program, got in right away, and the rest is history. That's how I really became a pathologist. How I got back to University of Colorado is really an interesting story because I had always wanted to work in the state. But the rules are, you know, if you go to school in the state, it's not likely that you're going to end up a physician there.
Yeah, you have to go elsewhere.
But I had a research interest, and I wanted to do research during my residency program, and a man took me under his wing. Dr. Gary Miller, who is still very special to me, he was my mentor. At that time, he took me under his wing. I ended up doing research in prostate cancer, really loved it, he liked me, and so I went off to a fellowship at the NIH in research pathology, and he really talked me up and said, we want this guy back here, so let's do what we can to get me back. And so he was really instrumental in me coming back here. Within a year and a half of my arriving back here to take a position in pathology at the University of Colorado, he died. And I got a call from the chair and said, you know, you're the only one who's worked with him to the extent that you have. Can you take over his research program? which was a daunting task. But yeah. I said, yeah, to keep his legacy alive. And that's how I kind of fell into what I do now, which is prostate disease research, not just cancer. And became a surgical pathologist at the University Hospital.
Wow. It's so interesting to hear how people... It's barely ever that people are like, I knew my whole life what I want to do, and then I did it, and it was great. But it's always like this moment of panic of, oh no, I thought I was going to do this, but now I don't know what to do. And then you kind of fall into it.
So, you know, there's that song, Blowing in the Wind. That's how I felt my life has always gone. God's been the wind. He's been the wind under my wings, if you will, all this time. All these things that I thought I wanted to do and needed to do and had, those things ended up being a lot of dead ends. If I just let myself go, he put me right where I needed to be.
Yeah.
And the same thing has happened in my faith journey as well. Faith journeys begin as kids, but they usually get interrupted. And that was the same way with me. You know, I went to church with my family all the way through elementary school and into high school. And I basically did my time, right? It wasn't until high school that I really gave myself up to the Lord. It happened because my best friend was at a different church. We sang in choir together in high school, and he wanted me to come and join this great youth choir that they had at his church. Why not? I can go sing and
meet girls.
You know, and so, yeah, I went to that. And at first it was just that. It was singing and meeting girls. Well, there was one night where at a rehearsal in the winter, so it's dark out and blowing, nasty, gusty winter, and everyone in the choir was just off that night. And the choir director stopped rehearsal. He just looked around. He goes, we don't need this tonight. We need Christ. He stopped everything and invited us out to go into the sanctuary, which was dark. We turned on the lights, went in there. Everyone got in a different place. He wanted everyone in a different place in the thing. And he just wanted us to close our eyes and kind of took us through some talking about, you know, what was going on at school, what was going on in our families, what was going on between friends and everything like this. And he took the opportunity at that point, and we're just listening to him talk, but I took the opportunity at that point to say, if any of you are ready to really accept Christ in your heart tonight, I want you to raise your hand and we'll come around and take you. It wasn't until somebody grabbed my hand that I realized that my hand was up. I was so caught up in it, I didn't even realize that I had done that. And it was just a really powerful moment for me. And maybe that's what's gotten me so involved in choirs at church, because it seemed to me that the Spirit of the Lord was with that choir. And he tapped me on the shoulder at that moment and said, I've got something bigger and better for you. So that was my commitment at that time. So I went on to college and made sure that I could be at a church where I could sing in the choir and do activities with the church.
Yeah. Well, what's interesting about your story is I remember when I was a child, I went to a friend's church for VBS. And there was a moment where they talk about Jesus and accepting him into your heart. And it was one of those, before I knew it, I was just walking up to the front. And so like when you said, I didn't even know I had my hand up till he touched it. And I was like, that seemed similar type of experiences. Also, I was like, I'm standing up here now. And
and if that's not blowing in the wind.
Yeah.
Nothing is. You that was unintentional. All of a sudden you got taken up by the wind, and mm-hmm. this is where you need to go to. And so I followed that as we go. So I, as I told you earlier, I went on to do a fellowship at the NIH. That's where I did my fellowship after residency program. That's mm-hmm. where I wanted to do my my pathology, research pathology fellowship. And I went there, and we were going to be there 2 years. So we went out with the kids, the family, and what we were really going to do is lay low for a couple of years and then come back to Colorado and have a job here. And then the wind blew. And we were looking for a church. Ann and I were just going through churches to try to find the church that we wanted to be at for the couple of years we were there. And we went to 13 different churches in the first 8 months that we were there. And the church we ended up at, we got there because we had made a mistake at the church that we were intending to go see this time. All the churches there had started at a particular time, except this one. This one happened to start a half an hour earlier than all the others did. And so when we got there, we were halfway into it. It was like, well, let's go to a different church. What's down the road? Is there anything close? Well, there's this church way over in Olney, Maryland. It's 20 minutes away, but all right, let's go. We'll make it just in time. And we got there, and we were actually a little bit late, but we walked in, and at that church service, the youth choir was due to sing. They mm-hmm. sang there one Sunday every month. And I sat down, and then the youth choir was walking up, and they just kept walking up and walking up. And it was like, there's like 50 kids in this youth choir. I'd never seen a youth choir like this. And they were dressed in T-shirts and jeans that said Joyful Noise on them. And they came up, and then they sang, and they enjoyed it. And I turned to Ann, and I said, this church may have something going for it. If all of those youth are having that much fun singing yep. for church, there's something going on here. And so we stayed. We met within about 2 weeks, just in serendipity, we met the directors of that youth choir. And they were just these wonderful people, Tom and Becky Price. And they were so happy, you know, you're new, come over to our house and everything like this. And so we joined them at the house, and he got to know who I was. Yeah, you play piano and everything like this. And finally he goes, so you'll be playing piano for our youth choir, and so, right, won't you? Oh, I will? Yeah. Why don't you, this is your official invitation. So I what am I going to say, no? So I said, okay. And the blessing was mine. Unbelievable moments that we had with that youth choir. You know, life-changing moments like mine mm-hmm. happened all the time. When I left, 2 years later, less than 2 years later, the choir had 105 people in it.
Wow.
And it wasn't just from our church anymore. There were people who came from all churches around to sing in the Joyful Noise Choir because there was great things going on there. And so yeah, it was a really powerful moment. But again, it's just blowing in the wind. So we came to Colorado, and we immediately, Ann and I, went back to our old church in Denver. Was a Methodist church, the University Park Methodist Church, which for us was, we lived in Larkspur at the time, was 45 to 50 minute drive up to go to church
and back,
and really difficult to get involved in church activities when there's that mm-hmm. kind of difference going on.
Yep.
But I sang in the choir there and actually had a, that's where I started doing drama ministry, was at that church. I was asked by the minister because he knew I had done musical theater. And so he asked me to open the drama ministry. So I felt kind of tied to the church and started looking around before I did because she wanted someplace closer. So she discovered New Hope. Mm-hmm. And for a while we went to different churches. We didn't like that, but that seemed to be what was going on. And she came home one time and I asked her, how was church? And she goes, it was amazing. Okay, what was amazing about it? And she started to talk about the people, the sermon. And you know, at that time she'd been introduced to Russ. And she goes, no, the sermons are special. She said, it's the only church where every sermon was written especially for me. Mm-hmm. So I started, okay, maybe I need to do this. Maybe I need to cut my ties up there and come where I'm closer, experience church with you, and really experience what this is. Came down within a few weeks of experiencing New Hope, really saw what her point was, because it was true. There was some fire in the box from Russ that I had not seen. Experienced in other churches before. And so that was inspiring, but I still didn't know where I was going to fit in. I wanted to do stuff. So mm-hmm. I talked to, at that time, Sam and Di were involved in the choir, talked to them about getting in the choir. So I sang a little bit with the choir, but they soon found out that I played piano. And pretty soon I became one of the pianists for New Hope as well. And back when we were in the old sanctuary, we were doing, at times, three services a Sunday. it got to be a load, and we were doing it every Sunday. But it was just a blessing. It was just a wonderful opportunity to be able to play. And then Sarah came. And I don't think I've ever hit it off with someone as fast as Sarah. Within 5 minutes, we were best of friends from that point on. She was just
and she's pretty easy to click with sometimes. She's a wonderful person,
and we became music buddies. And so that's how we really found ourselves at New Hope. And what I've always wanted to do, I've always believed in myself and in others, that if you set a ceiling, you're probably going to stay within that ceiling. That you should always try to move the bar. Never be satisfied with where you are. Let's try, what can we do different? What can we do more of? And I guess that spirit is what really speaks to me about New Hope, because you got everyone here has the same spirit. Mm-hmm. What can we do different? Where can we be? It's like what Russ said today at church. How can we be relevant? And we need to keep changing, and we need to keep moving that bar ahead. And the spirit here was that, where I've been in churches where satisfaction seemed to be the, we are where we are, this is what we're doing, it seems to be work, it's comfortable.
It's been like this for 50 years.
We've always done it this way. It's comfortable. And I thought, boy, if I never hear that word again, mm-hmm. if we can get out of our comfort zone, we can start pushing the envelope a little bit. That, to me, is what Joyful Noise Youth Choir did for me. They pushed my envelope. They got us out of our comfort zone. And that's what New Hope has done for us. I think Anne and I can both speak. There are times we've fallen into comfort and the easy way through, and the times that we really grow the most is when we're pushed. Mm-hmm.
And even more recently, I think, you started up kind of a drama ministry again. Was that like 2015, or have you been doing it earlier than that?
So it's been over 3 years. It's been about 3.5 years now while we did that. We were invited to do that again by Nick. when he came, he said, you know, he was, his concept was that it wasn't just music, it was art, mm-hmm. That we could do a lot of different things. It's writing, it's poetry, it's artwork, it's theater, it's a lot of different ways to touch people and make points. And so he sat down and talked to me about, you know, what I thought of doing a drama ministry. And I told him what I didn't want it to be. I didn't want it to be some of the short, trite Christian pieces that I'd seen a lot before that hammer down one particular point in an elementary school style. You know what I mean? It needed to speak to people. And I said, everyday things are sacred here. So what I want to do is bring out points in some of the literature that's out there, even if it's a small point, you bring it out in a way that people can nod their heads and go, yeah, that speaks to me. And so some of the things that we choose to do in the drama ministry are like that. Mm-hmm. And we push the envelope. We started out with some, to gently introduce the concept of a drama ministry and what that means. We did more lighter comedies or comedy drama work. We did On Golden Pond, for instance, which is a wonderful, it has a lot of points about interpersonal relationships among family members and mm-hmm. what it means to be family. And then we've had some heavier pieces, like we did Agnes of God, which is really pretty poignant and really gets to some of the church things that are kind of controversial,
yeah.
particularly at the Catholic Church and things, and how it revolves around sin and how it revolves around the fallen, if you will. Because Agnes is a fallen child, and how that works. So we've done some heavier stuff, and we've done some lighter stuff, we've done some musical stuff. All of it for the idea of making people think a little bit.
God can transcend things even though they're not labeled Christian. And I think some movies have deep spiritual themes, but they're not Christian. And for a certain group of people, they say, well, it's not Christian then, if it's not proclaiming Jesus. And it's like,
doesn't have the good hardware stamp on it of
right.
Christianity.
Yes.
And it's not official.
Yeah. But some of the more, I'd say, profound spiritual experiences I've had in the movie theater have not come from quote unquote Christian films. And so
me too.
I understand the, like plays and theater doing drama and things that aren't exactly, you know, Christian, but there's something there.
Or at least make people think about something by presenting two sides to a story sometimes mm-hmm. is good. And we don't often, one of the different, I'm trying to put it in words, one of the differences between Christian drama and the more secular works that we believe have a sacred point to them is that the Christian dramas come at it from one point of view with the answer. Mm-hmm. And sometimes the others bring both points of view, get you to think and get you to find your answer, listen for the voice that speaks to you and how this controversy should work out in your heart.
Mm-hmm.
That to me is powerful. Because it allows me to work through it. Otherwise, if we're just told what to do all the time and are not our heads, we don't really. That to me is spiritual ice cream. You know,
yeah.
It's not even deep. It's not even that nourishing.
Mm-hmm.
to really get you to think, and have your doubts, like you brought up. You know, is it okay to have doubts? Well, you should have doubts because then you need to work through them.
Mm-hmm.
Without them, I think. The soil is very shallow.
Mm-hmm.
And when your faith gets tested in shallow ground, it crumbles.
Right.
If you've had a time to really think about it and grasp it and internalize it and make it yours, when those troubling times come, you can weather them.
How do you feel? Do you feel good about what we've all talked about? And
absolutely. And I hope I've answered some of the questions that you had and some of the inquiries you had into where my background is and what we do here.
Yeah.
And I'd be glad to speak to anyone anytime about, you know, where to go. And if we've got different things that we haven't touched on in the drama ministry, I'd love to hear from you.
Well, good. And thanks for sharing your story, Scott.
Thank you.